Welcome to episode 276 of the Microsoft Cloud IT Pro Podcast, recorded live on March 25th, 2022. This is a show about Microsoft 365 and Azure from the perspective of IT pros and end users, where we discuss the topic or recent news and how it relates to you. Today, Scott and Ben spend the first 15 minutes or so discussing Teams display devices and Teams phone before spending 10 minutes going completely off the rails, reminiscing about times past and old technology. They managed to get themselves back on track about 25 minutes in to answer a listener question around sharing content from SharePoint with external users while also maintaining certain security and compliance requirements. Scott, you want to buy a device. You are getting more gadget syndrome. You haven't bought a gadget in a while, and you are trying to figure out which gadget you should buy next.
You know, I follow a whole bunch of feeds for things, right? Like we kind of talk about how we follow RSS feeds for events. We're in all these Discord servers, Yammer communities, like blah, blah, blah. Like there's all this stuff out there. Reddit, you know, you get everything. And one of a couple of RSS feeds that I follow are related to deals. And quite often those are like constrained feeds around deals around technology. So, hey, there's a new refurb, blah, blah, blah phone coming out and it's this much money. There's a discount on a TV, a computer, a hard drive, like those kinds of things, right? The space that we're generally kind of playing in. And on one of those feeds last night, I saw a thing pop up and it was for a ThinkSmart View for Microsoft Teams. And the ThinkSmart View for Microsoft Teams, like, wow.
This is like Teams naming. Everybody and their ability to name stuff.
Some product manager had to think really hard about that. It's a certified Teams display device. And in fact, it's the only certified Teams display device that exists out there. And I didn't even really pay attention or know that there was this category of Teams certified devices outside of headsets and phones and all those kinds of things. You know, I think which most of us are pretty used to.
I do remember when these were announced, and I know there were two at one point in time.
I don't know what the second one was because I immediately took the name of this device and I went over to YouTube to see if I could find some reviews of it. And most of the reviews are older, like they range in age from a year to 2 years old, which is fine. Like, okay, this could be a device that came out 2 years ago as the whole pandemic was starting, or it could be something that came out a year ago to be like a prosumer enablement kind of thing. And maybe it was like an adjunct to Teams Rooms or something. And I just missed the announcement. So I started going down the YouTube rabbit hole and I was looking at things, oh, this thing looks kind of interesting. Okay, it's a speakerphone, it's a camera. It's doing many of the things that a Teams connected phone would do, but I'm like, what makes it not a phone? And, you know, what's going on? I had never really heard of these things. So Teams certified displays are devices, but like I said, this ThinkSmart View is really the only certified one right now that you can pair to your PC. And then what happens is, like, when you start a meeting, say I went in today, like you and I do the podcast in Teams now, so we both fire up our clients. If I had this device and it was on a paired computer, it would actually start the call. Like I could go on my computer, say start the device, and then it would spin up and it would initiate the dialing and everything on the ThinkSmart View. So the ThinkSmart View takes over a couple pieces of functionality in a meeting. It takes over the audio. So it's got a microphone array. It's got a speaker on it. It takes over the participant view. So you and I are both on video right now. And, you know, the little thumbnails that are quite often get like really small in Teams when somebody's sharing a screen or doing something like that, it just automatically stays on that screen. And it could be off to the side, it could be in front of you, whatever it happens to be. And then if you want to say, like in your Teams session, you want to share something, or I'm viewing something that's shared from you, I still have access to the Teams client, but some of those other things that make it harder to view what's going on the screen, like where'd the chat go, what happened, who's talking, all that, it kind of gets segregated or pushed out over to that Teams certified display device. So the thing that really got me into it wasn't necessarily that, oh, like, hey, a Teams certified display, that looks nifty. I mean, we've talked about how we have the Jabra Pucks and things like that. Like, maybe the audio quality would be better than a Jabra Puck. Like, that'd be a thing to go for. But it was kind of intriguing to have a device where I could initiate calls on one side or the other. I could spin them up on multiple devices and effectively have the right device for the right job. So offloading some of the more kind of, you know, auditory things that happen in a Teams meeting over to a device that's dedicated for that, and then having, you know, still your computer in front of you ready to go and do what it needs to do. The other thing that I really liked about the device when I saw it in the reviews was that it supported multiple orientations, portrait and landscape, but there's a dedicated tab because it's effectively running Teams for Android on top of it. Like, it's an Android client, basically. And that means you get nice things like, hey, a dedicated tab for your calendar in the Teams client on that device. So all day, I could actually have my calendar set up effectively on the side, like just a little smart calendar ready to go. I was like, all right, so that all sounds kind of cool. And they're cheap right now. The particular deal, like the way I kind of started going down that path, it was $80 on eBay. And these devices used to be hundreds of dollars, about $350 when they launched. And they were meant to be used in corporate spaces. So these aren't the kind of personal devices. So some people might have heard of, I'd heard of the personal devices, which were not the Think Smart, like the enterprise line, or I guess the corporate worker line, but more like the Lenovo tablet on the desk that was a companion device that was more in the consumer space. And those were pretty pricey. Those were like $160, I think, when they launched, like US dollars, but certainly more reasonable than $350 for what is a dedicated Teams companion, and really kind of useless on its own, I guess, if you can't link it to a computer, is kind of the way it seemed to me. And for $80, I was like, well, man, should I buy this? So I immediately had to, you know, text you and say, have you ever seen this thing? Like, what do you think about this? What's going on? And then I started doing the whole Google Bing DuckDuckGo search, you know, through your search engine of choice for Teams certified displays, and see where this ThinkSmart View thing fell out. And it's totally a certified device. It's got some real downsides to it. It's old, like a year to 2 years old at this point. It's running Android 8.1, which is super long in the tooth. Who knows if they're going to update it, but it is currently the only Teams certified display. And it's currently only going to be supported, at least from a Microsoft perspective, and according to docs.microsoft.com, until the end of this calendar year. So until through December 2022.
Yeah, the next 9 months or so.
And then I was like, for $80 to have what might be a nicer microphone, some like more beam-formed kind of microphones, but still on an external device where I don't have to have a lav, I don't have to, you know, wire up like the microphones we record the podcast or anything like that on. Like, maybe, but then I don't think I can link it to my Mac. And that's disappointing to me. Because I would totally spend $80 for a decent microphone. I'd be sad when it went away if it turned out that it was like drastically better than, you know, the current Puck that was in front of me. As far as like the Jabra, when I take calls anyway.
Yeah. It looks like these were announced. So I found some of the old articles. I actually managed to find the old Microsoft one too, where they introduced these Microsoft Teams displays. And these were like July of 2020. So it was about 2 years ago these came out. And I'm wondering, like, because I asked you, I was like, okay, so what's the use case for it? Like you said, because I looked at these two and I remember when they came out and I had the same thought of, is this like a dedicated speakerphone type thing, like a Puck with a screen on it? And again, I can't remember if they worked with Mac, but if I'm remembering right, the same thing I came to the conclusion of is it's a paired device. It's with my computer. I mean, I get like having the calendar up and stuff, but I think I thought like, okay, if the video's down here and you can't see me on the podcast, but I end up like looking down at my desk or wherever it is instead of up at my monitor where the video is. And I couldn't rationalize in my head the business case for spending $350 on something like that? Like, was it going to give me a good advantage?
At $350, it's rough. I don't see any value there, especially if your employer is not buying it for you. $80, $100. And if it worked, even from, if it was as good, and I would expect it to be hopefully a little bit better sounding than things like the Jabra UC pucks, like the 510, the 7, the 400, the 7s. Yeah. Like all those different series. It's truly freeing to be able to do meetings from an external microphone that's also a speaker, handles noise cancellation, all those kinds of things, right? Like when I'm on a meeting with somebody on my Jabra puck, I'm never the person who's causing like feedback or anything like that. I'm not the one causing echo on the call. And I never have to mute that thing unless I really want to, like if my kids are being loud in the background or anything like that. So having a nice device that functions in that way, it is freeing. And I really like the idea of having a dedicated display for my calendar. Like that would be valuable to me. Even if I wasn't going to use the video on the thing, I would probably use it for audio. I would certainly use it for kind of camera display kinds of things. Think about like not so much the type of meeting that we're doing right now where we're face to face and we probably do want to look at each other a little bit more. But if you're doing something like delivering a webinar, you're never looking down at that device anyway to see the sea of faces that are going on for the 100 people down in the corner. You just want to sound decent while you're on it, maybe without having to wear a headset or do other things.
Yeah.
So that all sounded like really cool and really good. And then you go out and start to read some of the support documentation or watch a review of the thing and you're like, oh, man, yeah, I guess. That's pretty rough.
Yeah, I wonder if the market just wasn't there for it because, and I'm guessing that's why, like $350, to your point, is a lot to spend on it. The only reason it's probably $80 now is because it's being discontinued in 9 months and it's running old Android and all of that. Like, what would be the advantage of that versus like a phone? I did not have a phone for a long time. I used everything on the computer. I'm doing some work with a client, rolling out a whole phone system, migrating them from a legacy PBX, porting PSTN numbers, all of that. And I was like, I should get a phone because I haven't had a Teams device on my desk for a long time. I like having the phone there again, but it kind of does everything that you said in terms of I have a display, I have video, I have my calendar, because it's the same thing. It's running a modern Android app. It's like an 8-inch screen on the phone running Android. It's the Lenovo or the ThinkSmart device for all practical purposes. If I'm on Windows, I could pair it with my Teams client and do the same thing, but it's only a Windows function. But on my Mac, it's just a standalone device. So not only do I have the option to pair it like I could with a ThinkSmart if I wanted to, but I can also use it as a standalone device. I can reboot my computer, not get kicked out of the audio, and have all of the benefits. And I would say plus the benefit of it being a standalone device or a paired device. And I think it was actually cheaper than $350 too.
I get it. Like I get excited when I see funky new things that maybe I didn't remember seeing, you know, 2 years ago when they came out.
When they first came out?
Yeah. When it comes to like the Jabra pucks, like this Jabra 510 that I use on all my meetings, that thing's old as dirt as well. Like those came out years and years and years ago, but it's a device that just works. And I'm kind of scared that it's going to die someday and I'm not going to be able to buy another one that's just like it. I've actually thought about just going to Amazon today and catching them when they're on sale and becoming one of those technology hoarders. You know, you just want to buy two new ones in the box. Like they're like that old computer, that old laptop keyboard, like that old external keyboard where you're like, I really love typing on the Apple IIe original keyboard. And it was the ADB was the best interface for connecting a keyboard ever. And you can't take it away from me.
I have the Yealink MP58. It's $350, but you can also get the MP56 that has most of the same functionality, minor differences for like $230. So I wonder if they ended up competing with phones and there just wasn't a big enough market for like a device that wasn't really a phone. Kind of sat in a weird middle spot there.
Maybe the whole drive to work from home thing, you know, really like it just eviscerated that market for them. Like they, you know, I could see the value in having pair devices like that that are configured for hot desking and kind of all the things that you need, right? Just go ahead and leave it there. You wouldn't have to worry about giving every user in your organization a nice microphone, decent camera that can view all their nose hair because it's at an awkward angle. You just say, hey, come sit at this desk and plug your camera or plug your device in and you're all set.
Yeah, it is. It's interesting. But yes, I am sorry, Scott, for $80. I mean, I guess you could get it and use it for 9 months. So you'd get like $10 a month out of it, but I don't know that it would even work with your Mac. It would be interesting to see if it worked, considering the phone does not work. Did it plug in? Like, was it a physical plug to pair that one, or did it pair over the network?
Over the network. Joins over Wi-Fi, and then it supported like Bluetooth if you wanted to wear a headset or anything like that. The only plug that it had on it was a power plug.
Okay, so that's the same way the phone works. Although the phone I can actually hardwire into.
Yeah, only Wi-Fi on that one, which might have been another downside, but I wasn't too worried about it when I first saw it because it was like, you know, all it's got to handle is the audio. It doesn't have to handle screen sharing or anything like that because all that's going to drive on the PC that you're on anyway.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't know. Maybe someday we'll have to come back and revisit phones a little bit further because it kind of took me on this weird off track where now maybe I'm a little bit intrigued to see if there is a better way to do those things in kind of a dedicated home office space.
Just go buy a phone. Just go buy yourself a Yealink phone, Scott.
All right. Maybe. We'll see.
I should call you on mine and see what the audio is like compared to the Puck.
We could do that sometime too.
Yeah.
We could actually probably do that on the podcast itself someday and kind of go back and forth with some of those audio differences since we've certainly espoused how much we love the Puck thing. We really haven't talked about the experience on the other side for the person who has to hear you.
That would be interesting. And I have the headset too. So like the desk has like the whole like old school, like hold a phone up to my ear thing. Only it's a Bluetooth one. I got the Bluetooth handset, so I don't have to get all wound up in the telephone cord.
There you go. The youngins, they won't even remember what a telephone cord is.
Rotary dial, where you like spin your finger. And then the worst was when whoever you were calling had a whole bunch of zeros or nines in their phone number, because you'd have to start and go all the way around, and then you'd have to like sit there and watch for the dial to spin all the way back around only to do it again.
So quick aside on like old things and maybe like dating ourselves for how old we are, or at least for how old I am. My kids have never seen the original Karate Kid, and the theme song to it was playing the other night on, you know, Spotify or Apple Music or something like that. And I was like, oh, I kind of like, what's that song from? You know, I think it was in some movies and it's totally a theme song from Karate Kid. So I was like, oh, we have to go watch that. So we sat down and we watched it last night. And my youngest son, he's 12. And in the very early scenes in that movie, one of the things is that family is moving from New Jersey to California where they're going. And their car really isn't that great. Like they have to pop the clutch to get it started. And, you know, that means pushing it, hopefully down a slight incline to get it going. And my 12-year-old, he turned around and he looked at me and he said, Dad, when you were growing up, is that how everybody started their cars? Not everybody, but sometimes we did that. Like I totally remember my first car was a piece of junk manual. And yeah, you could totally push it on an incline if you learned how to pop a clutch early.
Oh, that's funny.
Yep. So there were things like that. There was like bicycles that don't come with shocks and everything on them. It's like, is that what bikes used to be like? Yeah. Oh,
with like, what about like the curly handlebars that looked like the ram's horn things where it was the old 10 speed and they curled down underneath?
There's a couple scenes in that movie where they're at, you know, an arcade. And like one of the things in the arcade is, you know, the love machine, like you hold the handle and it'll have like the lights in front of you that go up for, you know, how much somebody else is going to love you kind of thing. And he's like, hey, people really did that? Yeah. Yeah. We were weird back then. Sorry.
Oh, man.
Anyway.
We could talk about all kinds of old stuff and kids that have made us feel old because I am definitely to that age now where, like, I don't think I'm old, but then I'm around some younger kids because let's face it, they're kids now. And they'll say something or I'll say something. And I'm like, oh, I really am old.
It gets rough out there. what's the other one we ran into? We've been going back and my kids are into the whole kind of spy movie genre thing, right? You know, they like Mission Impossible.
Okay.
You know, we skip like some of the more adult scenes in Bond, but they really like the new, like James Craig, you know, Bond movies, things like that.
Yep.
And my wife and I really enjoyed 24 when that series came out.
Yeah.
So we went back
and— I remember binge watching that one. I'd wait till the whole season was out so I could binge it.
We restarted 24 from the beginning. And there's like 8 or 9 seasons. I forget how many it is, but we're starting at season 1. All the computers are so old. All the phones, you know, they're flip phones without screens. People are using pagers. It's just like ridiculous, the technology that's in there. That was sci-fi at the time, you know, when it was coming out, because it was meant to be the spy stuff that like regular people didn't have access to. And it turns out we're all modern day James Bonds or spy kind of people.
It's fun. Have you gone back and watched some of those? We're going way off topic today. Like some of the old nerd computer movies, like you go back and watch Sneakers or The Net or like the original Hackers.
Yes. Hackers is still one that's like near and dear to my heart, but it is a movie that, you know, if you don't know what's going on and you're not from that time, it's not timeless.
No, most definitely not. So The Net is always interesting because that one, it was, I went and looked it up, it was 95. So it's 25 years old, 27 years old. But some of the stuff in there is still applicable because it talks about how easy it is to steal identities because everything is online and everything's on the internet and all of that. It was like 27 years ago.
If you want to go back and find some things that'll like really throw kids off for what our lives were like with, you know, early computers and things like that, go watch War Games with Matthew Broderick.
Oh, yes.
And you've got the Whopper, yes, I'd like to play a game kind of thing. Like those are all kind of in there.
Oh, good times. I'm trying to remember what other ones I had. I have to go like look through Plex of the ones that I had DVDs of.
Oh, there was War Games.
I still own some of those.
Explorers. You know, one that aged really well, The Abyss. If you haven't gone and watched The Abyss in a while, we did that one a couple months ago. Batteries Not Included, still excellent. The original Blade Runner, still excellent. Howard the Duck is just as weird as you remember it. Weird Science is great. Again, probably not great for little kids, but Spaceballs, still wonderful. Well, there's just so many of these things that are, they're just ready to go.
Yeah. Oh, there was the Net 2.0. Who knew? 2006.
Do you feel overwhelmed by trying to manage your Office 365 environment? Are you facing unexpected issues that disrupt your company's productivity? IntelliJink is here to help. Much like you take your car to the mechanic that has specialized knowledge on how to best keep your car running, IntelliJink helps you with your Microsoft Cloud environment because that's their expertise. IntelliJink keeps up with the latest updates in the Microsoft Cloud to help keep your business running smoothly and ahead of the curve. Whether you are a small organization with just a few users up to an organization of several thousand employees, they want to partner with you to implement and administer your Microsoft Cloud technology. Visit them at IntelliJink.com/podcast. That's IntelliJink.com/podcast for more information or to schedule a 30-minute call to get started with them today. Remember, IntelliJink focuses on the Microsoft Cloud so you can focus on your business.
Now that we've massively sidetracked, should we come back to a topic?
Sure.
Nobody's ever going to get to this.
We can do our best. Can you tie it to, I don't know, we go from like Batteries Not Included to Cocoon or Critters or Killer Clowns from Outer Space. You know, how are you going to get us back on track? I'm intrigued.
I have absolutely no idea how I'm going to get us back on track. We had two things that we could talk about now that we've probably lost all of our listeners. I'm going to have to put something in here. Like if you want to miss the random banter, skip from 15 minutes to like 25 minutes into the episode because we went off the rails for 10 minutes.
Yeah, this will be a good one for podcast chapters. People should let us know if they'd like to have chapters in these things.
Yeah, because we kind of quit doing that. Nobody said anything, so we just never went back and did it. Should we talk about a listener question? We haven't had a listener question in a long time, and we got one the other day. So should we finish off with this?
Yeah. Before we do this, we have a contact form on our website And you can use that form to contact us and you can do wonderful things like ask questions. The other thing that you could do, we've talked about it a whole bunch, but we'd love to have you join us on Discord and have some side chats with some other folks that are in our community that have already joined there. So all you have to do is sign up for our newsletter. We'll give you a link, come into Discord, join us, use our contact form, give us some questions. We love those kinds of things. I don't love the more kind of support-related ones, but I like the ones that are more architectural or, hey, how would you think about this kind of thing? But yeah, we'd love to have more of those. And there's multiple avenues that you can get those to us or reach out to us on Twitter. We've got MS Cloud IT Pro is the podcast handle, or you've got Ben and myself with our Twitter handles as well.
And we do read all of those. I would love to actually read more listener questions and less click here to go buy a little blue pill.
Yeah.
Despite my best efforts to put spam filters in there and like all kinds of ways to avoid getting those in, like verification, they all make it through. I don't know if there's some API that they found or what, but that's beside the point. We got this question from a listener, and I'm just going to read it, and then we can go back and sort through it. And if you are still listening, this may get to be a little bit longer episode, but if you skip the last 10 minutes, you'll be fine. So first of all, this listener does love the podcast, almost always learn something from it, but they have an issue that we might be able to help with. Number one, and this is kind of the scenario, is currently they have a SharePoint tenant that does not permit any type of external sharing of any kind by design. So all read-only permissions are granted to everyone. So it sounds like in their SharePoint sites, they added like that everyone except external users group to be able to read everything. This means that any of their auditors, third-party vendors, and others need to have Azure AD accounts. They have to go create those internal Azure AD accounts. They provision those for whatever they're doing. They're in the process of re-upping licensing with Microsoft, and they're kind of stuck. They said it's less than like 30 to 550 licenses for the auditors, contractors, et cetera, that they're providing licenses for.
Yeah, and that's tough when you have to provide licenses for external users in your tenancy when, like, for the most part, you know, you should be enabled to not have to do those kinds of things. But I think sometimes if you're in regulated industries, you know, that might be like financial services, could be healthcare, could be government, tons and tons of that out there.
Yeah.
It becomes an operational and certainly like a cost burden over time.
Right. And I'm assuming based on this that they're doing the process of the re-upping licensing. It sounds like they're probably on like an enterprise agreement. So they're probably like in a 1 year, 2 year, 3 year agreement. They're re-upping these licenses. So they're not just let's go buy a license for a month and doing like a monthly commit, but it's 50 licenses of some sort for a year or more.
Well, that's the beauty of it. Even if you're not on an EA, if you buy a new license today, even though you pay for it monthly, you're buying a year of it.
Yeah, that's not a small amount of money. So that's the scenario they're in. And they do have, based on the industry they're in, they do have some certain regulations. But their main point right now is that from multiple departments, so this is coming to the IT department in this company from their multiple departments, they want to have the ability to selectively share certain documents to certain domains. They already permit about 4 domains to initiate and schedule Teams meetings, but that's not the same as moving the sliders in SharePoint to allow, sorry, I lost my place in the email, in SharePoint admin so that you move from like only people in your organization up to existing guests or to new and existing guests. From their standpoint, as a single sole SharePoint admin, as well as adminning other services, how do they continue to resist the pressure to open those floodgates when the business can't handle a single breach or a minor breach of information that's stored in their SharePoint site? This individual feels like if the coworkers continue down this path, that the blame would come back on him if there was some type of breach or if any of this data got out. What should he do? How should he handle this if there is a breach or before a breach and after a breach? kind of what are our thoughts on how we would handle this particular scenario?
You want to start or you want me to?
You want me to start? So the first thing I would do is, I can absolutely go start with this. There's a couple things to think about. And the one thing that isn't in here is licensing. And that obviously plays a part in this as well, because some of the things I'm going to recommend, you may or may not be licensed for. The first thing that you could do, and I'm logging into my admin center right now so I can talk through it, but you can limit SharePoint sharing a SharePoint site to certain domains. So if you go into your SharePoint settings...
So this would be my first thought is this is a capability that exists in SharePoint today. So much like you're restricting domains within Microsoft Teams and kind of limiting what type of things can go on there, if you have a clear set of guardrails around other organizations that you want to share with, you can absolutely restrict that sharing of content across SharePoint and OneDrive for Business all by domain. Like, it's built in, it's there today, it's available to you today. You just have to know where to dig around in the admin center to get at it.
Right. And I don't believe this one actually requires any special Azure AD licenses. Because if you go into the sharing, so you talked about the sliders in SharePoint, where you can go set only people in your organization, existing guests, new and existing. Right underneath that, and it can be easy to miss, there is a bold text that says more external sharing settings that's collapsed by default. If you go in and expand that, you have limit external sharing by domain. It's a checkbox you can check and then start adding domains. You can also allow only users in specific security groups to share externally. You can set a checkbox that guests must sign in using the same account to which this sharing invitation was sent. So they can't accept that invite with like an MSA account or some other account. They'd have to use the account it was sent to. You can allow or unallow guests to share items they don't own. So you would be ensured that those guests couldn't go in and share stuff themselves. And then you can also set guest access to a site or OneDrive will expire automatically after X number of days. All of those are hidden underneath that more external sharing settings. Based on what this listener was saying, I would definitely go at least start with that limit external sharing by domain.
Yeah, like that's a great place to start. All those settings that you talked about as well are available through PowerShell. So they're in the set SPO tenant commandlet and the same types of things that you said there, like, hey, all good, ready to go. It's built in, you can configure it. The functionality, like if you think about the general flow of saying, hey, let's limit users that can share to a specific security group or set of security groups, also really nifty because you could almost have like an onboarding program there where maybe you do like user training. And users have to complete their training on how to share in SharePoint and understand your organizational principles, your policies, all those kinds of things. And then once they complete that, they're added to a security group. And then, boom, that goes ahead and lights up the ability for them to share things along the way. The other thing that you could do is maybe if you're not looking at it from a tenant level, like you're not looking at it at the organizational side of things, but you want to be more restrictive on a site-by-site basis, like maybe you keep like a whole set of site collections as just that kind of, you know, current configuration that you're in, you can also limit domains for a site as well, which can be helpful. Same kind of thing. Like you'll go in, there's going to be advanced settings for external sharing on those sites themselves. And then you can go ahead and limit by end domains there. There's some limitations with that stuff. Like there's an upper bound to the number of domains that you can share with. You can't wildcard a domain. So, you know, if you worked with businessunita.contoso.com and businessunitb.contoso.com, that's how your partner organization is set up, you'll have to have both businessunita.contoso and businessunitb.contoso. You can't just do star.contoso and get away with it.
So that's one. And this kind of ties into it. I don't know that you could... I'm trying to think about all of the options here, and I haven't set this one up fully yet, but you can also do conditional access on a site by site basis. So you have conditional access for the whole org. There is also conditional access policies per SharePoint site. That one would be a little bit harder to do per domain, but you could start putting in additional restrictions in place, again, based on certain sites. The other thing that comes into play here that you can start doing now on a SharePoint site basis that ties into Teams and Microsoft 365 groups is you can look at doing sensitivity labels and then enabling sensitivity labels for Teams and SharePoint sites so that as these sites are created, as Teams are created, sensitivity label can be applied to it, and that can also enforce certain policies so that you can start separating out these sites of which sites do we allow external users into, which sites do we not allow external users into. And instead of leaving it up to users to kind of decide should they or shouldn't they, it's a lot easier to educate users on this is confidential, this is internal only, this is external, and having them pick a label and then set those policies for them based on the label that was selected for the site. That would be something I would look at. And the other thing, I'll do one more and then I'll let you see if you have any more you want to throw out there, Scott, is the listener asked about a breach of certain information, PII, PHI, any of those. You can go set up those DLP policies. This is not going to be a foolproof way of limiting by domain for external users, but this does go in and say, you know, if sensitive information is detected, if it pulls up credit card numbers, social security numbers, full names, addresses, whatever that sensitive label is, actually block or prevent sharing that particular file externally. So you can apply these DLP policies in your compliance center in Office 365 to email, to SharePoint, to Teams. You can even do it to on-premises files. Again, depending on your licensing, you can even go so far as to say, don't allow users to save content with DLP in it to like USB drives. This is getting kind of above and outside of just sharing with external users. But I would also go in and start setting up DLP policies to help protect that sensitive data as well.
Yeah. Those are all like kind of the current in-market options. They're available out of the box. They're there today. You can turn them on. Maybe one of the other things to consider is if you've been, I don't want to say limping along, but it seems like kind of like limping along with this level of kind of current configuration and functionality and pushback from the business and everything, is maybe thinking about upcoming preview features. So last week we talked about things like shared channels, which then has that dependency on B2B Direct Connect. And kind of a similar thing, if you're going to have partner orgs and those orgs are scoped very clearly for you, and you need functionality that even extends beyond SharePoint, because I think quite often this stuff starts with, hey, I need to share a file, and then it turns into, wouldn't it be great if we could chat in Teams about this as well? That you can start to extend it over to that side and potentially maybe think about like, hey, if we did this today, this is what it would look like. If we grow into it later, does something like shared channels work for you as well? Because then you get Teams with all the chatting, you get the SharePoint site behind it. It's still a site collection with a lockdown configuration. You know, it respects your organizational settings, all those kinds of things, or maybe some mix and match between all of those. But maybe like spending a little bit of time in some of the documentation and or even like playing around in like a dev tenant or things like that just to get hands-on with it would be a good thing.
Yeah. And then kind of the final part of this question is what to do before a breach and after. I think we kind of talked about different ways you could do the policies. Before the breach, I would make sure you have good logging and you know where you're going to go get it. The Unified Audit Log in the Compliance Center, making sure that is enabled. Most new tenants, it should be enabled. If you have an older tenant and you've never looked at it, it may not be enabled. Go turn that on right away. So you start logging all of those activities. And then I would say think through going even into after a breach is maybe you want to start shoving this out into some SIM. You want to push it out into Azure Sentinel. Maybe you're just putting it to log analytics for now so you can query it. How long do you need to keep it? You can do it to other SIMs. There's a lot of other SIMs out there that have connectors into Office 365, but making sure you have that logging and you know where it is so that if you do have a breach, you know a particular file that was exposed to data that it shouldn't have, or you want to be able to go in and say, was this particular data content with a sensitivity label? We talked about those. Did your DLP policies catch something, not catch something? But having like Azure Sentinel set up with a unified audit log allows you to really go in and write some of those queries. We talked about the KQL queries and we talked some about this a few episodes back so that you can go see if it you don't want it to fall back on you, who actually shared this file. Those logs will track who shared the file, what IP address they shared the file from, and all of that other information. So you can go start developing a trail and a log of how was this data exposed in a particular breach.
What I would do, there's probably some documentation to go read and just familiarize yourself with all the terminology if you're not there, or maybe kind of get a little bit of a refresher on how Microsoft has positioned all these things and how they're thinking about using SharePoint as a B2B extranet solution. So I'll put a link to a doc that's handily titled, Use SharePoint as a Business-to-Business Extranet Solution. There's a little bit of like jargon in there, things like that. But if you skip all the way down to that bottom of that doc and you go to the Get Started section, there's dedicated links that will take you into the hubs for collaborating with guests in a site, how to create a B2B extranet with managed guests, how to collaborate with external participants in a channel if you want to use something like a shared channel in Teams, like I mentioned. And it's also got links down, like the very last bullet in there is limit exposure to files when sharing with guests. So some of the kind of file sharing stuff that we talked about previously. And there's also an article called Create a Secure Guest Sharing Environment, which is really good, really deep. Like it has coverage across setting up MFA for your guests, configuring sensitivity labels, using DLP, configuring auto labeling policies, configuring session timeout. Maybe you want to think about like web-only access for your guests. I think you just start with kind of that one article, use SharePoint as a business-to-business extranet, and then kind of filter out from there, you know, go ahead and do the butterfly effect thing based on what your wants or needs are around that configuration.
Yeah, I forgot about that web-only access too that you can do with the app access policies. That's another good one.
There's a ton of knobs and levers in there that you can turn. Some do require additional licensing, like, you know, additional access and things like that. So maybe you've got to pick and choose based on where you're at. Or, you know, in this particular scenario, if you're thinking about doing a renewal with Microsoft, like it is a great time to figure out, do you need any of that advanced functionality to continue to support the business, move it forward? Like, does that make sense from a delivery to the business perspective, like from the IT side of the house?
Yeah, absolutely. Because I was thinking of that as you were reading through that list. I was like, in my head, I was like, Azure AD Premium, Microsoft E5. There are definitely some features in there that are Azure AD Premium and M365, E5, like the auto labeling. I know that's an E5 only SKU when you start getting to some of the auto labeling, but hopefully that gives you a good point to start.
Yeah. If not, come back.
Shameless self-promotion or just call Ben and you can hire Ben. Yes, definitely come back if you have follow-up questions. If you want to come chat about it in Discord, or again, it is shameless self-promotion, but if you want help with it, I'm always available as well for a fee, reasonable fee-ish, kind of. Anyways.
And that's really how you can think about, I need to lock down SharePoint, but I need to be open.
I get it. There's a lot of different things there. We talked about a lot, but I think based on what you said, you could definitely achieve it without leaving that responsibility solely on you. It just is going to take some work, some configuration, possibly some licensing. Definitely achievable based on what was submitted in that question. So with that, Scott, we have gone for an extended amount of time today.
Yeah.
But it was good. And I have my own problems I need to go solve with mystery settings and SharePoint that if I ever get this figured out, or even if I don't, this is going to be another podcast episode because I messed something up that I can't find.
Never happens. But maybe we can talk about that another time.
So what happens when your production tenant is dev and test and demo all in one?
It happens. Happens to the best of us.
Go enjoy your weekend, Scott. Don't work too hard. Watch some old movies and reminisce about the good old days of technology.
All right.
And we will talk to you next week.
Sounds good. Thanks, Ben.
If you enjoyed the podcast, go leave us a 5-star rating in iTunes. It helps to get the word out so more IT pros can learn about Office 365 and Azure. If you have any questions you want us to address on the show or feedback about the show, feel free to reach out via our website, Twitter, or Facebook. Thanks again for listening and have a great day.